You are listening to the Punk News Podcast episode. Actually, I gotta look up what episode this is. I don't know. But while I'm looking up the episode, I'm here with M Moore. M Moore, what's going on?
Hello, I'm reading everyone's year-end lists. It's
This
very
is episode
exciting.
712, mind you. We're also here with Sammy B. I always thought it was Sammy B, but is it Sammy's B? Have I been saying it wrong the whole time?
So the funny thing is, I think that is partially an inside joke between me and my inner circle because apparently my husband has mentioned numerous times to me that I put S's on the end of everything, which I'm not sure if that's like a New York thing because we all just throw S's around. So it ended up Sammy's B. Sammy's, well, my screen name. Plus I also have like, my screen name, which when I was like establishing something like a MySpace, I know I'm like dating myself really, really, really badly. My like the normal one without the S was already taken, so I had to add a character there, and I was like, well, everyone says I put too many S's in things, so why the hell
Well, there you go. That explains it. So, anyways, and this is John Gentile, features editor or co-head editor with Sammy and M. And we're through the new year, and a lot of cool stuff's happening in punk news. I'm just going to hit some of it. We've got the next record freakout coming up, which is on February. We had to actually move it. It's going to be February 21 at Philomoka. Also, Summer Soiree 9 details about 50 to 60% bolted down. So hopefully, this time next week, we will have the full details of Summer Soiree 9, and it's going to be kind of cool. And by kind of, I mean very cool. So we've got that in the chamber. I'm excited about that. So at Punk News, we ran the best of 2025, our lists rather, and the readers submitted their lists as well. And actually, I was pretty surprised by the list. Is there was like almost no crossover whatsoever. I think the only crossover I had was Homefront with M, and M had it way up high on her list. And I think there was like no other crossover whatsoever.
I had a crossover with Sam Holden.
Oh, what'd you have as a crossover?
Creeper, Sanguivore 2, Mistress of Death.
Well, there you go. So, anyways, people seem to enjoy the lists. On Reddit, someone said that my list had no punk on it, which kind of shocked me because I felt
What?
my list had like way more punk than I've ever had before on my list. And frankly, there's nothing as boring as the punk rocker that only listens to punk and further only listens to maximum rock and roll style punk. I mean, I've said this before. Jello does not only listen to punk. Iggy Pop does not only listen to punk. Keith Morris does not only listen to punk. Penny Rimbeau doesn't listen to punk. You know, Steve Vignor doesn't only listen to punk. The Damned don't only listen to punk. And I know this because I interviewed Captain Sensible, The Damned, that's going to run this week or next. And we're going to have an interview with The Damned at Punk News very soon about their new covers record. But I'm just going to run through my list super quick. Just Civil Rats, definitely punk. Blank Crumb, definitely punk. Vosh. Does goth qualify as punk? See, to me, I mean, I realize that goth and punk are two different genres, I guess. But to me, the underground element is there. So does goth qualify as punk?
Yes.
Okay,
I
so
think it's like a subsection, right?
Quam punk, Men Without Hats, not punk, but they started out as a post-punk band. But all right, I'll let that one slide. Ministry, I mean, Ministry's not a punk band, but they're industrial, so I say that counts as punk, you know. Alice Cooper, not punk, I guess, but instrumental on every form of punk. Sex Pistols, Sex Pistols, Sex Pistols, Jello Biafra, the Melvins. So you know all. Oh, I know who. Negative Approach, Alice Cooper Group, hugely influential on all those acts. Fucked Up, definitely punk. L.A. Witch. I mean, to me, L.A. Witch is punk, or it's like it's a half a step removed from punk. Is L.A. Witch punk? I feel like they're punk.
I
I
I'd
think they're
say,
punk. Yeah.
like more garage punk,
Julia
maybe.
Julia, which is Julia the
Really
Coat
good.
Hangers. Coat Hangers definitely are punk. Julia Julia is kind of more indie rock or dream rock, you know? So I don't know. Does that count? I mean, if your main thing is punk and your album itself is not that punk sonically, Dissidence as punk as it gets, Slaughterhouse as punk as it gets. Moira Weaver, she's in the punk world, but arguably her record, I mean, I think her attitude is punk. I don't know if the music itself sounds punk, but to me, punk doesn't necessarily have a sound. Juanita and Juan, here's another one. Is that punk? Because it's Alice Bag and Kid Congo, as punk as it gets, but the record itself is more Tropicana themed. You know what I mean? So is that punk? I don't know. I mean, to me, yes,
Yes.
but Scow, punk. Peter Murphy, goth, not punk. I'm gonna talk about that in a second. Sister Nancy, reggae, not punk, but she's reggae, and reggae and punk go hand in hand. Melvins, as punk as it gets, Homefront punk. And Melvins again, punk. I was honestly surprised that several people felt my list was not punk at all. I mean, did they want me to just list like NOFX 20 times, or do they want just maximum rock and roll style lists? But the fact of the matter is, maximum rock and roll, like those top 20s are cool, but every band sounds exactly the same. Every band sounds like Poison Idea crossed with Discharge, or they sound like Devo sped up a little bit. There's only two maximum rock and roll bands: Devo sped up, or Poison Idea meets Discharge.
Well, John, this is your list. It could be anything, and who the hell cares if it's punk or not?
Well, true. I mean, I
Yeah.
think it is punk, but I'm saying I was shocked at the perception of many of the punk community in that my list is not punk. To me, like, I thought my list was extremely punk this year.
Well, here's the thing. What is punk? Punk,
Well,
it's, and that's the thing. It's like, the type of punk I like might not be the type of punk you like. So everyone has a different
it's still
perception of
punk.
what punk is.
But I wouldn't say your list isn't punk. What's funny is, Sam, when you said, "What is punk?" my brain immediately went to, "What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. What is love?"
I love Hathaway. So sure.
So anyways, our lists are up. I'm going to make one quick comment. This is what I love about the year-end list. First of all, I had heard the sister. Actually, I got a couple quick stories. I had heard the Sister Nancy record. I liked it a lot, but I said I better listen to this record before I finish my top 10 list. And I'm like, damn, damn. Of course, if the listeners don't know, Sister Nancy, first female dance hall singer, the first. She's got an incredible album called Bam Bam. She's got, which has been, there's many versions of that song by other people. She has dozens. Hundreds, rather, dozens or hundreds of singles. Many of them are astoundingly good. She only has two albums until now. So, in like 45 years, she's only put out two, but now three albums. Her third album, amazing. Now, check this out. I feel bad. We've been making fun of Peter Murphy for the past year. I finally
Oh.
actually sat down and listened to Peter Murphy's newest record, Silver Shade. I mean, I heard clips of it. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's his best solo record ever. His last one, Lion, was very good. His other solo records are terrible. But for whatever reason, despite the chaos that his life is in, his new solo record, Silver Shade, it's the closest record that he's done that comes close to Bauhaus. It's awesome. And I'm like, oh man, maybe we should actually been listening to his music instead of making fun of his shirt for the past year. So, anyways, Peter Murphy's new record, great. One quick last story. At about 7 a.m. on Tuesday, I get a call from Hollywood, Florida. I'm like, this is spam. I'm not answering this. I get another call about 9:15. I'm like, oh, maybe it's like a business thing or whatever. And I'm like, hello? And they're like, is this Joe Gentile? I'm like, who's this? They're like, it's VP Records. I'm like, VP Records? They're like, did you order a Sister Nancy record? I'm like, I did. And they're like, did you order a Junior Mervin record too? I'm like, I did. And they're like, did you order a Bobby Digital CD? I'm like, yes. They're like, did you want vinyl on that? I'm like, no, I want the CD. I ordered the CD. And he's like, okay, we just wanted to check. And like the guy was like mad. And I'm like, oh, so you guys, I guess because I ordered three records and one CD, I thought maybe I made a mistake. So I start talking. I start for about, I would say about 120 seconds, maybe even 3 minutes. I'm like, yeah, man, VP Records is great. It's so cool you guys are doing the Sister Nancy record and the Junior Mervin record. And you're putting out all this great stuff. So it's so cool, you're doing all this stuff, and I really appreciate you guys putting all these great reggae records. And what do you think his response was?
Cool.
We're not that record label.
No, his response was okay. And then he
Which
hung
the line of
So I don't know, man. Anyway, that's my quick story. Anyway, Em and Sam, were you shocked, surprised by the best of your list? Did you enjoy reading them? Did you think they sucked? How did you find your list matching up with the readers' lists themselves?
Again, this is my personal list, and this is my like crazy trauma of a year list. So, my list was very reflective of like, the nonsense that I have to deal with on a day to day. And I don't think it matched. My list definitely didn't match up with a lot of people on the site. But I do would have to say that, even though we all listen to punk, more or less, there's a lot of other outside genres that we listen to. So I personally don't think that I should be catering my personal list to, I guess org core anymore, or whatever. There's, every year I've been doing these lists for like what, how long? Like 10 million years, right? Because apparently I have not died yet. Every year it's different. Every year something might catch your ears. So that's what it is. I was like, some years the list might look more punk, some years it might not look more punk. And again, the what is the definition of punk? I guess that is kind of subjective because we seem to have a hard time defining it, and I think the people at the Punk Rock Museum does definitely have a lot of discussions about what should be included in the museum and what's not, what is your take on it?
Oh, definitely. On punk as a whole, or like what is punk?
Well, whether or not your list,
Oh.
works with the site, what you think punk is or not, whether or not you think this graphic of a giant fly
Oh.
is scary or not.
First of all, the Spirit Box record rules. We have crossover there. The graphic is awesome. Every year, I look forward to seeing what terrifying Victorian Christmas card or New Year's card Janya find. It's
Thank
awesome.
you.
This is great, though. This is in the top 10.
Thank you. Thank
Like,
you.
look
Of
at this.
terror.
Yes. I like the one running away because it's like I tried to hit it with this umbrella and it didn't work. I'm just
Well,
going.
clearly the fly is larger than the umbrella.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no match for it at all. With my list, yeah, I try not to cater it. Like, I try not to be like, oh, this is an album that people are talking about, and I'm gonna put it on there because people are talking about it. Maybe I didn't really like it, maybe I whatever. I did that with my first list. Fun fact. My first list that I did for the site, I don't remember what year it was. Maybe it was 2019 or 2020. I don't remember. Anyways, that list, I did all of it in one night because I misread the deadline. And there's I think two or three albums on there that I didn't listen to. I just put on because I was like, people are talking about it, so it must be good.
Shame, shame, shame.
Actually, I don't think it's that high. I think it's just two, but
I
with
see that
this.
happening because you're new. I get that.
Yeah, and then just anyway, I don't do that anymore. That's only on the first list. But all this one in particular is like, I want to do something, and like last year too and stuff, but I want to do something that's 100% reflective of what I listen to, kind of regardless of if it's like punk or not or whatever. So I think overall it represents my listening pretty well. There's lots of punk on there. There's lots of like screamo and metal and experimental stuff and like kind of synth punk and some goth. Oh, I also have the fucked up thing on there too, John. So we have another crossover there. And just really tried to focus on like different artists that I just kept going back to, and a lot of them are Canadian, like which was also important to be like, hey, I want to talk about some really cool shit that is coming out here, like Bonnie Trash and Slash Need and Emma Goldman, Ribbon Skirt, like lots of cool stuff. So I think I did a pretty good job. This is the list I think I'm proudest of my own, because I did a different way of approaching it. Like in the past years, I was like, I am going to like flay myself open and get so deep into this stuff. And that isn't really a good way to do it. And this way, it was okay, I'm gonna really focus on the balance of what it is and then how I feel about it and merge the two instead of it all being one or all being the other. So very, very proud of this. And I think punk's like whatever, like musically, whatever you make it, anything that's like very unexpected, right? So like the Amiokama album, like it's very, very experimental and it's in a lot of different heavy genres and there's clearly a punk influence in some of the songs. So while it's not, you know, like Sex Pistols punk, it's still, I think, is under that umbrella of a term. You know, and the same thing with Ribbon Skirt. Ribbon Skirt's more, well, they're kind of undefinable. Like they're really, really cool. And they've kind of made their own genre out of a lot of different things, you know, kind of including like indie rock and there is post-punk and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's something that's unexpected and continues to push boundaries and says what it wants to say. And there you go.
What is love, baby? Don't. Damn, that song came out in 1993 in the middle of grunge. I thought that song came out like 1987.
It's dance music is like strange because they just like it just kept on like happening. Yeah. The 90s dance music is like where my heart is, unfortunately, but
The general perception of the 90s, especially the early to early mid 90s, is totally wrong. And that people think everything was Nirvana and Foo Fighters. But really, I mean, hair metal, kind of that synth pop, really continued into about 93, 94. The 90s didn't really start to like 1994, if that makes any sense, you know?
And then the tail end of it was like, you know, that bubblegum pop era that like, you know, that's where a lot of the boy bands that, you know, I love came stepping in and I think even Spice Girls, you know, like things like that. There's always like it's funny because when we like think of like music and like eras, I was like we sometimes we don't think that like there's multiple genres like thriving at the same time,
Right, true, true,
you
true.
know, like happening. And you know, then it just like, you know, tapers off into the sunset. Like, you know, even now, like the young folks now, you can attest to this if you want.
Oh, sure.
Like, you know, grunge is totally in. Like, you know,
Yeah,
that's
grunge is in.
back. All of the young kids are like, oh yeah, I'm gonna make like moody music, and I'm like, yeah, I'm here for it because guess what? I like grunge and my husband loves grunge, so if you're making new waves of grunge, cool.
They love
But
Alice in Chains. I'm like, what? Alice
yeah,
in
Alice in
Chains?
Chains is
Ugh.
so good. Why don't you
Ugh.
like Alice in Chains? They are
Because they're terrible and
great.
bad.
No, you are wrong.
Sam, you just saw Robin, the singer.
Oh my God. Yes, Robin, the Swedish pop singer, came around Brooklyn. She did apparently a New Year's party, New Year's Eve party, and she also like did some TV thing, some Rocking Eve TV nonsense, where she went to Times Square and performed. I don't know how that timing came into play, but whatever. She was everywhere. I was actually fortunate to get tickets to, 'cause she did a January 2nd date. And it was literally the best time ever. Pretty much sold out Brooklyn Paramount. Everybody was screaming and singing and dancing. I think it was like a great way to like start 2026, you know? She pretty much played all the hits and a couple new songs, and apparently a new album is coming out soon, so which is very sexy. I read a couple things about how like, you know, the this I think the album's called Sexistential or something, and it's really sexy music. So I'm here for this. I'm here for Robin. The best part of the night was pretty much like she stopped singing. Hold on, let me see. Like a couple many moons ago, there was a viral clip that went viral, where she played Madison Square Garden, and after Madison Square Garden, a whole bunch of people filed into the subway station and started to scream, or sing. I'm pretty sure it's Dancing on My Own, lyrics to that. So she definitely stopped and singing, and the entire crowd finished the song for her, which I was like, this is amazing. This is magical. Crowd participation is always great in my books. So,
We're gonna hit the
yeah.
news in a second, but Sam, explain Robin to me. Is Robin just a pop star, or is she kind of like the underground pop star, or like the cool people pop star? Because I know a lot of people kind of in like the punk scene in Philly, but more so kind of like the indie cool art scene, you know, and they all like Robin. Is Robin just the same as like a pop star, or is she like slightly askew to quote pop star?
Well, I it's funny because I've seen Madonna, I've seen like pop acts before. I would have to say like there is a subset of people that is definitely into indie, that's definitely artsy fartsy, that's definitely very LGBTQ, like that's into Robin. She's definitely not at the caliber of, like Madonna. I guess like in just the brevity of things. But I would have to say she does sell out like Madison Square Garden, and she does sell out big spaces. Yeah, I think there's like it's just a little different, but yeah, she's definitely a pop star.
Okay, well, they have it. Robin is a pop star, according to Sam. Let's talk about another pop star, perhaps a more another LGBTQ plus pop star, but one that's perhaps a bit more divisive than Robin. Morrissey has signed with Sire Records, and he announced a new album. His new oh, he didn't give a title, but he gave a track list. However, it appears the new record is not going to be the previously announced Bonfire of Teenagers, which had a song, an amazing song called Rebels Without Applause, which really check that song out. Great song. This appears to be a second album recorded after Bonfire of Teenagers that Morrissey has alluded to. And so he signed with Sire Records after having a nasty fallout with Capitol Records. And so he's got this new record coming out. He also is on tour right now, and he canceled his first two tour dates. So a lot to unpack, and we'll throw it to M first. Is it, you know, Morrissey has had a rocky 5 or 6 years or 7 years with some statements that he's made. He's kind of not made those statements over the past 2 years or so. Most of his shows in North America are sold out, and overseas, almost all of his shows are sold out. But he just canceled an entire South American tour, and the next day he announced a European tour, which might be this one. And then he canceled the first two dates of that tour. So, three questions here, or more. First question is, has Morrissey bounced back? Is Morrissey at Morrissey, we'll say 2005 level, you know, where everyone loved him and he had the clout to pull his diva antics, if you will, because he's Morrissey? Or is he kind of still on the ropes like he was a couple of years ago after being dropped by Capitol? Second question is, I was going to post about these shows being canceled, and maybe we should have, but I'm a little worried that it, beating up what, like he says, oh, it's a medical issue, and he canceled an entire South American tour, which is surprising because that's where he's massive. He's biggest in South America. So I don't want to, if a guy's having a medical issue, I don't want to beat up on him. You know what I mean?
Right.
And C, do you think the new album's going to be good?
So first, I think he's bounced back or still on the ropes. I think he's still on the ropes. But I don't, just because of like The comments have been in the past. They haven't been like, it's not like he's out there saying anything horrific right now, but they're still there. And just with the shows being announced and then more shows being canceled, even if it is a medical issue, and if it is like, again, hope he gets better and recovers well, because like that friggin' sucks, I think because of those things, he's still a little bit on the ropes. I don't think he's back up to where he was right now. I think that's going to take a little bit longer. I think, if he puts out some good stuff, or he successfully completes tours, or something like that, I think there needs to be a bit more done to get him back up to the par. With the album, I don't really know, because was the Bonfire of Teenagers track list ever released? I forgot to look it up.
I don't know if a track, a bunch of songs. He actually has played almost the entire album live, and there's a bootleg that I want to get that's impossible to get that has most of those songs live on it. So I don't know if the track list was released, but say 75% of the songs have been performed live.
Okay. Because that was the thing that I was thinking about when I saw the track list, was, are these Bonfire of Teenager songs that maybe have been renamed, or maybe have been like tweaked a
Perhaps.
little bit or something like
Perhaps.
that? So I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case with it. And just kind of using the live versions maybe as demos or something. But yeah, I saw something today that the rumored title is Makeup is a Lie, which I think is one of the songs. Yep. One of the songs. So,
And the more important question, Em, the most
yes.
important, will Sire regret this?
Yes.
That
I think there's going to be something with the contract that's going to be brought up, and he's going to be like, hey, this isn't good or something. Baseless speculation.
Sam, where do you stand? What do you think is going to? Sam, are you even a Morrissey fan? I forget.
I am not a Morrissey fan, thank goodness. However, how do you release all this track listing and not an album title? Who does
Morrissey.
that? Clearly. Deranged? I don't know. There are so many questions to this that I have, because okay, so one, Sire might actually regret this. Who knows? Because again, I don't have the contract, you don't have the contract, because John, if you had the contract, you'd be spilling the beans.
I would be.
Two, I'm like, this is kind of crazy, because Morrissey is kind of like, in some people's eyes, God, in some people's eyes, but he still has a following.
Sam, I'm going to interrupt you and we'll get this. Let's see if Em gets this. Angels to some, devils to others. Em?
Oh, I know this. What is it?
Hellraiser.
Yeah, because it's like I have it. I can picture. That was good.
Go ahead,
That
Sam. I'm
was
sorry.
good.
You said he's got, you said like he's God to some, or like angels to some, demons to others, or whatever it is. Go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry.
That was not planned, by the way. Okay. But yes, he still has a following. So even if they do press this on vinyl or actually put this out on a release, they might actually make money off of that, So in a way, this, I don't know if this is like, I'll sign you, but it's like real low stakes, because I'm not anticipating that you're going to tour or any of that. Because they're, again, like, he's huge in Latin America. He still plays, well, kind of plays, Europe. So, like, so there's still kind of like money generated in this Morrissey name, even without actual touring. I, again, like, the touring bit, I have no idea why anyone would put out Having such a, I guess, a precedented like history of canceling tours on people, actual tour dates, with crosses in them and all that stuff, right? put out actual tour dates and then continue to cancel it. Even if it's like a medical episode, it's kind of like it's one thing if it's like one tour that you did that to. It's like multiple tours, kind of crazy. I don't know. I think Sire is gonna get some money out of this if this actually happens. Still, I think it's crazy that there's no LP title, official LP title, and that we're going off of rumored and speculative titles for this thing.
Here's my take. I think the new record will be good, not amazing. I think Bonfire of Teenagers would have been amazing because I've heard a bunch of those songs, and like three or four of them are like literally the top Morrissey top tier. Is Morrissey on the ropes or not? I think he's maybe still slightly on the ropes, but I think he's done a lot of build back over the past 2 years. And the only thing that he needs to do two things to really get back to where he was circa 2005, 2010, where everybody loved him or whatever, or not everybody, but where he was. He was still Morrissey and not kind of a joke. A, he needs he really only needs 2 to 3 absolute bangers, which he can do, and 2 to 3 absolute bangers and 7 pretty good songs. Also, not saying anything incredibly stupid. So that's what he needs to do. Will he do it? I'm not sure. Will Sire regret this? Yes, they definitely will. And here's why. Morrissey's expecting $1993 for record sales. It's 2026. He's not going to get 1993 record dollars, and that's going to cause a fight. But what he fails to see is even though he's not getting 1993 record sales dollars, he is getting 2026 tour dollars, which is so much bigger than 1993 tour dollars, So I'm not, at his level, it kind of balances out, frankly. Anyways, I'm always, well, I'm always carefully rooting for Morrissey, I guess, but I do wish he would say, the couple things I said were whack, and I kind of got out of hand, and I didn't mean them. Kind of like I wish Danzig did when he put out that shirt that had the
Oh,
sun wheel on it.
yeah.
Just say, oh, my bad, I didn't know, my mistake. That slipped through the cracks. Just say it, man, and no one really cares. Anyways, so yeah, that's Morrissey. Gladdy, and tell us about Gladdy.
Yeah. Gladdy, we have talked about them a bit on the podcast. They released their album Don't Know What You're In Until You're Out in 2022, and they released some cool videos and stuff. So now they're releasing a new album. It's called No Need to Be Lonely. And it's coming out on March 20th on Get Better Records. And this is the first album that they're going to be releasing with the label. They've released two singles so far. The first single was Car Alarm, which they released in November back when they announced that they were signing with the record label. And now they've released Future Spring. Car Alarm is really cool. Future Spring is a lot like it's faster, it's a little kind of fuzzier, and it's a little bit angrier, and it's really good. Both songs are awesome. I really, really like Future Spring. And the video for Future Spring is very bright, it's very colorful. It's shot in this like diner that they credit as the Tasty in South Philly.
Oh, the tasty's great.
Oh yeah, because I was gonna ask, like, you guys, have you eaten there? Have you been there? What's like it like? Because it looks really cool. It looks kind of like out of The Simpsons, but in a really good way, you know?
The Tasty is great because it's kind of like co-owned run by Kate is great of, the Bouncing Soul song.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's
Yeah,
cool. Okay.
so it's kind of like the punk Philly spot to go to, if you're like, vegan and stuff like that. Yeah, and it's adorable. Come on. Look at the walls.
That's so cool. But yeah, like it looks sick in the video, like the band's playing around and people are dancing, people are eating. There's a chef whipping up some of the best plastic food you'll ever see. It's great. I'm really looking forward to this album. It's definitely one of the my most anticipated of 2026. So I have high hopes for it. What did you guys think of the new Glady?
This is I dig this. I will definitely check out more stuff. I was, a fan of Kaitana, so this
Yeah.
would make sense to me. The play food was hilarious, by the way. Like, I was like, wow. I was like, pretty much whoever cleans up after this diner experience is gonna have the easiest time cleaning up because there's literally not much washing that needs to get done unless you really want to wash plastic food. But it doesn't even look like they ate anything anyways because everything ended up in the pan afterwards. So doing dishes must be super, super easy. Yeah, no, I am willing to listen to more. Plus the fact that Rosenstock is, the produced by him. I can only imagine that the Punk News listeners are going to eat this up. John, what is your take on this?
It's cool. Glad it's cool. I like Gladdy a lot. And I'm looking at the video, and if you look carefully, you can see Nazreen from Taxpayers. You can see someone that works the door for R5. I forget her name. She's got the blue and purple colored hair. And it's
Oh,
kind of cool
cool.
to watch these videos and you say, oh, these are the people that are like out on the scene and stuff like that kind of thing.
Oh,
Gladdy's
it's
cool.
very Philly.
True.
That's so
And
cool.
of course, they're going on tour. And who's opening? But Noun is opening, and Noun on this tour will be Marissa Paternoster, Nazreen, and Ashley of Pinkwash. And of course, that's three-fourths of Universal Girlfriend. And who's the fourth-fourth of Universal Girlfriend? Augusta of Glady. You guys should know that.
Oh.
So that's going to be a very cool tour. I will definitely see the Philly show. So I'm excited for that. There's something else I'm excited for. Hardy Flanagan's re-recorded all of Age of Quarrel without John Joseph, of course.
Oh.
The reason he did it is so the recent Hardy Flanagan, well, the recent Hardy Flanagan documentary, Wired for Chaos, which is great, has some Cro-Mags music in it. And I'm watching it. I'm like, wow, how'd they get like Malfunction and Hard Times? Because famously, the Cro-Mags do not own the Age of Quarrel album, it's owned by a third party called Rock Hotel, who went, I don't get sued here. In my perspective, is not a very good label. And so, in order to get the rights for those songs, Harley re-recorded a couple of Age of Quarrel songs with just Harley, maybe some other people. Those sessions went so well, he just decided to re-record the entire album, which actually he's already done before. There's actually a live version of this entire album on one of his solo CDs. I think it's Harley's War, I think. There's two versions of that CD, and one's got all of Age of Quarrel live on it. Anyways, so I don't know if he said what he's going to do with it, but I hope this comes out. I will definitely buy it, and I think it's going to be awesome. I love Cro-Mags. I think Harley's great, and I think I'm a big fan of Harley singing these days. I think he's an awesome singer, and so I think this will be kind of a cool art version of Age of Quarrel, which I'm excited to get. If you look at all the comments online and everything, like, it's universally negative against Harley, and I truly don't understand why. And for a while, people were like making fun of him because there was that whole knife fight thing he got into about 10 years ago, and he kind of went to jail for a couple of weeks, but then got out because no one pressed charges. And everyone was like making fun of that, but I'm like, to me, that makes Harley awesome. Like Harley's got all these songs about I'm a dangerous guy, don't F with me because I'll F you up. Someone Fs with him, and then he totally Fs a bunch of people up, and I'm like, he's the real deal. He is what he says he is. And people seem to want to make fun of that, but to me that makes him like awesome. You know what I mean? Like, what's with the negative bias towards Harley? I think Harley's the friggin' man.
Well, we had Harley on the Punk News podcast
A few
before.
times, yes.
Yeah, and I wasn't he on 700,
He
the
was.
very, very long
Yeah.
700? And like he kind of like mentioned how he had like a really messed up like childhood and
Yeah.
living in pretty much the streets of New York. And I think there's like there is a thing about being from here and knowing what the past was like, because the streets of New York wasn't necessarily this bubblegum with stupid characters on 42nd Street and stuff like that. Trying to like, get you to give them money for a stupid photo. Yeah, so I think people are just like they don't actually understand his mentality unless they live here and deal with these peoples a lot. Because I was like, there's just so many times I'm just like with an older person, and I'll start talking to them, or they'll start talking to me because for some strange reason I'm approachable in New York. And they're just like very, you just hear it in their voice. I'm like, oh, you have stories to tell me. And these stories are going to be wild, you know? I think Harley's one of those. He has stories, they're wild. And yeah, he definitely effed people up because they mess with him. And he's at least very New York in the sense that if he says, I'm gonna eff you up, he's gonna do it.
I just don't understand is that people are like Harley's crazy. I'm like, yeah, he's crazy. He's Harley. He's crazy. He's wild. I
Normal,
think.
rational people don't think like New Yorkers sometimes.
Yeah, well, but
It's a
I mean,
survival instinct.
like Harley's got all these crazy stories about getting in fist fights and like even crazier shit than that, you know? And people are like. Like they make fun of him before, but I'm like, no, that's what makes him awesome. He's Harley freaking Flanagan. And you have a perspective here. Like, where does the Harley hate come from?
I really don't know. I'm not like, again, I know about Cro-Mags more just kind of like with us talking on the podcast. I have now listened to Age of Quarrel, like kind of stuff like that, but I don't really know a lot about the politics of the scene, I guess, for lack of a better word. But I think it boils down to like maybe what Sam was saying with kind of the there's a specific mentality, and that's how, like, that's just how he is.
I think Em highlights an important point, and then we'll move on to the next thing is it's two th to me, it's probably two things. Harley invented hardcore, NYHC hardcore. If he didn't, then he's a significant architect. But also, like people will ask Harley, like, Harley, how'd you get into hardcore? He's like, I didn't get into hardcore. I created hardcore, you know, which, you know. And so, but despite the fact that he created hardcore as a significant architect, he's not just hardcore. He's, you know, he comes from the punk scene and the art side of the punk scene. So, where a lot of hardcore is very unimaginative and boring and chugga, 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 and that's all it is. Harley comes from the artier side and even the musician side, you know? And so I think a lot of the perhaps second wave hardcore guys and after that are envious of Harley, or they don't like that he's not what he exactly what they want him to be, or maybe they're annoyed that he really is, you know, one level above them or two or three levels above them. On the other side of the equation, you know, still a lot of the reason that punk news are very org core. So, you know, Hot Water Music and Brendan Kelly and Hot Water Music, they're like, yeah, let's drink together and hang out and hug and go fishing and say, yeah, man, we'll get through this together. Whereas Harley's like knifing dudes, you know what I mean? And like whipping people with chains and like, you know, in like a bar fight and shit. Not a bar fight, like a club fight, you know, when he's had hits put on him by drug dealers and stuff. And that's so alien to them. And the purpose of Harley is not to be your friend. He's not there to reassure you that it's going to be okay. He's not there to say, you're doing the best you can. You know, now let's drink some more whiskey. Like, that's not Harley. Like, Harley's freaking Harley. And so I think he's threatening into that. So people kind of see him as perhaps a caricature instead of the real deal that he is. And maybe that's the other half. But anyway, Harley rules. I back any Harley project there is. I'm excited for this. And I think Harley's the man. Oh, here's something else that's kind of cool. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say this. I'll just whip through this briefly, unless Em or Sam have a comment. The Mosswood Meltdown has announced its pre-party plans. Vivian Girls, Pavement, and Wednesday are playing, and I'm excited. You know, Vivian Girls reunited this year. I saw them at Asbury Park. They were amazing. And they've played a few shows since then. It looks like they're kind of doing the thing where they're just going to play like four or five shows a year, maybe. And meanwhile, Cassie and Ramone are still doing stuff. I think Katie Goodman mostly just does Vivian Girls these days. So anyway, this is cool and exciting. And here's the question. Will there be a Vivian Girls Renaissance, or will Vivian Girls be kind of like the Ergs, where it's cool to see, but not necessarily an event when they play? Sam. And do you like the
I
Vivian Girls, or are you a Luddite that hates them?
well, I think I mentioned this on the podcast in the past. I went to college with Cassie
Oh, you
from
did?
Rome. Yeah.
You
Oh,
never mentioned that.
cool. Oh, yeah, no, I lived in a dorm room building with her,
Were you
my
friends or enemies?
freshman.
Oh, did you not get along? I'm sensing that's
No,
where this is going.
we just existed, and we're not all, and not every punk that goes to art school is everyone is friends. Especially when you're in art school, we're all like quote unquote weird, right? yeah, no, I did. It's funny because I do remember, like, seeing her at shows in Brooklyn. And just like not really knowing what was up there. 'Cause, I went to punk shows. I went to, hot water music shows. And Vivian Girls wasn't necessarily going to those things necessarily. But I do remember seeing her in the hallways of said dorm and or the common spaces of said dorm and stuff like that, and seeing her around campus. Don't think that this is going to be like a Ergs, like, I'm just gonna play whatever. I do think that Vivian Girls has a following to begin with. I do think that if they play more often, I'm not saying tour, I'm just saying like, play here and there. They're definitely, and it seems like they're hitting the right festivals and stuff, right? That people were going to be like, oh, well, I've heard stuff about them forever, and now I get to see them, and hopefully they do more. Yeah, no, I really think I don't think it's like necessarily going to be like a full-fledged renaissance, if that makes any sense.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Em, are you excited or do you hate the Vivian Girls?
I'm excited. I think this is fun. I think they're gonna do kind of like a Bratmobile kind of thing where they do like small runs, they do some festivals, like they're active, but they're not like going on weeks long tours or months long tours, I guess is a better way to put that. So I think that's kind of where Vivian Girls are gonna be. But no, I think this is great. I'm glad to see them playing shows.
One thing I want to point out that I think people have forgotten, and maybe even the Vivian Girls kind of want to forget it, is the Vivian Girls were kind of like the first buzz blog band. Like right when the internet kind of became extremely widespread, where it was when the internet became the thing where everyone accessed it all the time. There was music blogs, and Vivian Girls blew up so quickly. And then as soon as they blew up, like there was all like. There's a website called Hipster Runoff, which write like really nasty things about them, which if you wrote today, you'd be canceled in like 3 seconds, and people wrote like crazy shit about them, and they suffered so much undue criticism and attack. They got a lot of love too, but like people wrote crazy shit that I won't even mention that like you could not write about a band today, and that was kind of the negative side, and I think it's cool that they kind of trucked through and we're able to get to the other side. So anyway, yeah, man. Anytime Vivian Girls play anywhere near Philadelphia, I'm definitely going. Here's a sad story. San Francisco venue, Bottom of the Hill, is going to close at the end of 2026. So they're going to operate for this year, then that'll be that. Bottom of the Hill, fantastic Bay Area venue. I've been there dozens of times, if not over 100. I saw the Dwarves, our Born Again record release show there. I saw Classes of Love there. I saw Kebby Gooley, Dog Party, whole bunch of other bands there. Mike Park, I saw there. Awesome independent venue. Well, they're closing down, and they didn't say exactly why, but it's kind of clear that the reason they're closing down is to the economics of running a smaller to small mid-size independent venue in 2026, which is harder than ever. And of course, this falls hot on the heels of the Parkside saying they might have to close down, which literally is one or two blocks away, kind of two famous punk indie venues right down the street from each other. Amazing venues. I'm sad about this, and this is yet another sign that Ticketmaster and AXS and all those other creeps are just destroying Either, now they already own all the giant venues. Now that they own that, they want all the tiny ones too, which is sick and messed up, and it's a bummer. And I don't have my solution is listen up, you dickheads, go to shows and don't use Ticketmaster. But is anyone going to listen to me? No. And so anyway, this is sad. I love Bottom of the Hill. Maybe I'll make it out for one more show. I saw a very important Jeff Rosenstock show there.
Ooh.
This is a very important Jeff Rosenstock show. Just after Bond, the music industry broke up, Jeff Rosenstock did a solo show, and this was a show where it was just him and a backing track. And I actually did a review. Actually, I'll see if I can find on Punk News. The reviews on Punk News, I did a review about it. And Jeff Rosenstock was literally considering quitting music at that show, and because
Oh.
that show went so well, he decided to stick it out and become Jeff Rosenstock solo. And of course, he blew up maybe 2 or 3 years after that to something huge, or in the punk world, huge. And so that show is arguably one of the most important Jeff Rosenstock shows there ever has been. Here it is. Yo, here's the show. Here's the review. Sean Burnett of Andrew Jackson Jihad, Jeff Rosenstock, and Hard Girls live in San Francisco, 2013. Dog Party was there. So yeah. How you like that? So there you go.
Nice.
You can read the review at Punk News. Oh, I was still doing Celebrity Fashion Watch. I'm gonna read Celebrity Fashion Watch, which people hated. Asian Man Records founder Mike Park has begun to gain a distinguished salt and pepper mix to his tussle, giving him a sort of wisdom, even if he's talking about where to buy burritos. Barboso, which is Bob Vielma, was wearing a Garfield sweatshirt. Is this irony or genuine affection? It was genuine affection, as I later learned. Does the 21st century even have these boundaries? Bay Area. Oh, I can't. I can't read about this next guy. I'll tell you why afterwards. And then my last comment is Jeff Rosenstock wore shorts. There you go. So
Don,
anyway,
you need to bring
the
this back.
shorts.
Yeah, just bring
Yes,
that
please.
back. Celebrity Fashion Watch used to make people so angry because they didn't get that it was a joke. Like, they didn't get that it was supposed to be funny. Like, they generally thought it would be like a fat, which I wouldn't even be opposed to at this point. Anyways, so Bottom of the Hill's closing. RIP Bottom of the Hill. Sam, I don't know if you have any comments. What a great venue.
A lot of venues are closing because even Hall of Williamsburg, which is like, a big to do here in New York, is closing at the end of the year as well.
Yeah, it's messed up.
And like my issue is, where the hell do we go now? Like, smaller bands need places to go and play in order for our scenes to thrive. We have nothing, I was like, and then trying to get bars to like have live music, especially stinky punks or like, rowdy punks, is going to be hard, especially in these like areas like San Francisco. The cost of living there is just as bad or even worse than New York. So it's kind of like, where do we go and what can we do? I was like, I was at a loss when I lost Saint Vitus. I'm kind of in a space losing, Hall of Williamsburg soon. But really, I was like, whenever I sit there and I think about this, I was like, really, I was like, there is no like place that I could just be like, oh yeah, that I can just get a ticket to this venue and like have a great time because I'll be able to see you, or like, it's always a good time there or whatever. Yeah, I feel so bad about just loving music and not actually having a place or like a place to go. I totally see part of some of this issue. Maybe rents are going up. Because, a lot of these venues are might have been in questionable areas before, and now, these cities have like all of these high rises with expensive rent, and is like, turning over due to gentrification or whatever happening. Yeah, I don't know. John, I'm sad.
Yeah, it sucks. Well, the answer is where will everybody go? And the answer is illegal club shows, house shows, which I've been to many and they're fun. But to a degree, there is danger there,
Yeah.
and The point
Yeah.
of law is to protect the citizens. And because Ticketmaster is so unregulated and has been hit with many monopoly charges and nothing sticks to them, is really the law is out there to protect the rich people and Ticketmaster. And therefore, unlicensed clubs are gaining in traction, which they aren't in Philadelphia. They're getting in traction again after kind of declining over the past decade or so. And so the laws are making things more dangerous just because they're so stacked in the favor of Ticketmaster and ultra rich people, which sucks ass. And the other part is, and this is the sick part is one of the sick parts is the crackdown on house shows in Philadelphia is stronger than it was before. So you can't have independent venues and you can't do house shows either. And so they just
Nope.
want to squeeze every last penny out of everybody. And people need to make their stand, but they're not. And convenience is king. Anyways, let's move on to the next. Is another story. It might be a bummer story, a happy story, depending who you are. Laura Jane Grace has a new band. She is recording with Rodeo Boys, and it appears that Rodeo Boys are going to be the backing band on the new Laura Jane Grace record, which Laura is recording right now. It appears, and likely so, the Mississippi Medicals, which was Laura Jane Grace, Matt Pike, Mikey Erg, and Paris Campbell Grace, is likely broken up because there was accusations thrown between Laura Jane Grace and Paris Campbell Grace about 6 months ago now, with them saying things about each other and trying to speak delicately here. There appeared to be no real resolution, and it was a very public fight between those two. And I've got very definite opinions, which I've talked about before in the podcast, which I'm not going to rehash. So let's go back to the Morrissey question. Will Laura Jane Grace achieve her previous stature? B, will the dispute with Paris Campbell Grace tarnish Laura Jane's legacy? C, isn't it interesting how Laura Jane Grace has a new band every record? I think the Rolling Stones, they were with Bobby Keys for like 40 years until he passed away. They were with Ian Stewart. Not the racist one, the non-racist one.
Oh.
They were with the non-racist Ian Stewart, who's older than the racist Ian Stewart. They were with him for 30 some years until he passed away. Lisa Fisher, they were with her for about 30 some years till she retired. The Dwarves, they've been with Sergeant Saltpeter since 1983, Rex Everything for about 30 years, Fresh Prince of Darkness for almost 30 years. If we look at Weird Al, same band since 1984, but Laura has a new band every record. Sam, what do you make of that?
Yeah, that's a little crazy now. You kind of have to start to reflect and look at that and be like, maybe it's me. I have an issue with this because essentially this is like a backing band. This is a backing band that's already a pre-existing band that, is working with Laura Jane Grace, and it's kind of like, to me, I'm like, okay, so Rodeo Boys. Are you going to continue as Rodeo Boys in some aspect? Or are you like Laura Jean Grace and the Rodeo Boys? Or are you like some other name that you're creating? Because I always find it weird when like you get like a new person in a band, but you're still the same band, and how does that exist? Because like if Laura Jean Grace, like after you record, like just be like, oh, okay, well, I'm done. I don't need you because I found another backing band. Like, what happens then? Yeah, I am very wary about this entire thing. I feel like, when it was Laura Jean Grace and the Mississippi Medicals, it was. A whole bunch of people that she like was friends with and like put together for a project. And but this one is like a pre-existing band, so I don't know. Could also be that Rodeo Boys is like, hey, we have this opportunity. I'm gonna run with it and see how far this goes. Maybe it's one album, maybe it's two. Who knows? Yeah, I don't know. And
Am I, am, Am I being petty? Should I lighten up on Laura Jane Grace? Or like, well, and here's the other question is, going forward, do we? I mean, I did feel this was news that even though we assumed that the Mississippi Medicals were no more, I think it was
Sure.
important to point that in because it's clear now that they're most likely no more. You know, so because hypothetically, even though Paris and Laura aren't getting along, it still could have been Laura with Mikey and Matt Patton, you know. So it's clear
Right.
that's probably not the plan. So I felt it was not petty to put that news in. But I admittedly, you know, I am biased and I was a little petty in my article. But so M, do I have the wrong take? Will Laura Jane Grace bounce back a la Morrissey? And how do we report on Laura Jane Grace going forward? I think going forward we just kind of and I think going I think and in respondents, I think
Okay.
now that we've mentioned there's the fight, we covered that, you know, we which was news, certainly. And now that we've mentioned that it appears Mississippi Medicals is no more, which is news, I think going forward, I think it would be biased and petty for me to keep bringing up the past issues. So I think going forward, I think I just have to say, Laura Jane Grace has got a new record coming out. She's backed by the Rodeo Boys. It's called XYZ. It's out this date on a new label yet again. You know, is that the appropriate way to handle Laura Jane Grace news going forward? And I'll point out, and I'm not going to keep pointing it out, is I am annoyed that Laura Jane Grace had serious accusations leveled against her, and she suffered. And she said, "Oh, I'm going to go away for 6 months," and she went away for a month, and suffered no negative repercussions. And online, if you go to Reddit or wherever, people are almost unanimously backing Laura Jane Grace, whereas many other musicians have been accused of less and denied it and suffered way worse consequences. And that's my bias. And I'm not going to keep bringing it up, but that's my take. Emma, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think in this story, it's definitely worth repeating because, like you said, it is about the backing band. It's about who she's working with. It's all this kind of stuff. So I think in that case, totally fair. I think if there's an update on the situation that's going on, and you know, it's a newsworthy update. I think that's obviously fine and good and needed to talk about it more and kind of bring it up again. But I think moving forward, just with like, oh, if she releases a song or announces a tour or whatever it is, unless it's directly related, I don't think it needs to be in there because it's also kind of like, yeah. So, anyways, I think that's the case with the post. It is Rodeo Boys' post that they invited Laura Jane Grace to collaborate on. And their comment is just like, we're making a record together. So, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, like, are they doing like, is Laura Jane Grace like recording or like producing a Rodeo Boys album? Like, is it something like that? And then when I read the article, I was like, oh, okay, well, are they like the new backing band? Or it seems like they're going to be the new backing band. Like, how's that going to work? What's going to happen? So, I am interested to see what comes of this, because I think if, like, for whatever reason, the backing band idea doesn't work out, I think there will be music in one way or another. You know, if it's a split or probably not, but like, you know, if it's like something that she produces for them or something. But yeah, I was kind of surprised.
Do you think Laura Jane Grace will achieve Laura Jane Grace levels circa 2015, 2020?
I think if Against Me comes back, yes.
Do you think Against Me? I see. I don't think Against Me's ever coming back. Do you think Against Me's coming back?
I think there was a brief sliver of hope, but I don't know how bright that sliver of hope is anymore.
But from a strategy standpoint, now's the time for many reasons, you know. So yeah. Well, speaking here's another band that has no controversy. The Interrupters, they got a new record coming out.
Oh, God.
They're working on their fifth record. They didn't release a title. Actually, just this past week, it was day one in the studio. It's been a hot minute since the last Interrupted record came out, actually. I was thinking that the Interrupters might be done because I don't think the last record hit as hard as they were hoping it would. I think they were kind of hoping that the last one was going to be kind of be their break, their like big breakthrough record, and it kind of I don't want to say it flopped, but it didn't set the world on fire. 2022, that's not that long ago, 4 years ago. So anyways, I think M does not like the Interrupters, right, M?
I am not a huge Interrupters fan. I do like She's Kerosene because it was everywhere and it's very catchy.
I do think Fight the Good Fight, their third record, is super good. Super good.
Yes.
I thought In the Wild was overproduced and not that great. But I do think, to a degree, the moment might have passed, and I think the record's going to come out, and I don't think it's going to move unless they do something totally crazy. Which they're kind of in that weird place, and Sam, you can comment on this, is if they just do another straight up ska record, then been there, done that. But if they do something totally different, well, then is it the Interrupters, you know? So I think if they're going to do another record kind of like In the Wild, which will be kind of ska, some other non-ska, not that groundbreaking. I think what they should do, here's what they should do. Here's what the Interrupters should do. Same thing I suggest every band in their situation does. Pull a Rancid 5. Just do a straight up hardcore record out of the blue. Straight up. The Interrupters hardcore record would actually be banging because they are very good poppy songwriters. And when you apply hardcore to that, it's kind of the best hardcore there is. And that's the move, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. Sam, Interrupters, are you excited? Are you a fan? Has the moment passed?
Fight the Good Fight was great. In the Wild, eh. That's my take on that. They are excellent live. I've seen them live, I think maybe once or twice, and they are fantastic at what they do. But I'm not sure what to expect because literally the post that they put up was, I would have to say, anyone that has ever been in the recording studio recording and or with the band sums up how grueling it can be. Because literally the video is just the drummer checking to make sure that the mics are working. I was in the studio with my husband when he was recording the record that they put out, and I was just sitting there all day listening to the same songs over and over. So yeah, that gave me no semblance of like what I'm going to expect or what is to come. I really hope that they just go back into the ska because I do think that they're not done with the ska. I do think that there is like a ska resurgence, like still. So I do think that if they went that route, then cool. You know, there's still a subset of people out there that like would totally see them on a boat in the middle of New York Harbor doing She's Kerosene over and over and over.
Just that one song 10 times in a row.
Like,
Sam,
hey, if they did that'd be cool.
would they do the same version 10 times in a row, or would they do like a reggae version and a ska version? What would it be?
I think they should do different versions of of the song. Like, it's a very beloved song by them, you know? I'm kind of like, whatever they put out is what they put out. When it comes out, we'll see whether or not Sam likes it or not. I don't have any high hopes or bad hopes for this. It's just what it is. But then again, the Interrupters isn't like one of those bands that I'm like, oh, I love so much. Because, you know, Sam's ska days was like when she was like 15 years old.
I agree with pretty much that entire take. I like the Interrupters. I'm not like dying for it, but I'm interested to see what it is. I hope it's good. But M, much like Morrissey, perhaps like Laura Jane Grace, Interrupters, issues in the past. Of course, Amy Interrupter was on the Alex Jones show, and before he was totally, when he was just, when Alex Jones was very whacked out, not insanely whacked. Well, I should, when Alex Jones was insanely whacked out, but not insanely and despicably whacked out, I guess you could say. And she's never really addressed that, you know. Of course, that was 15 years ago now at this point, or even 20 years ago. So maybe she gets a free pass because it was so long ago. And you know, when you're 20 or 22, people can change their opinion. So where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on the whole situation then?
People can definitely change their opinion, but at that point in time, what was Alex Jones saying on his show?
He was saying whacked out stuff, but it was before he said Sandy Hook shootings was fake. But he was saying whacked out
Okay.
stuff.
Was he doing like fluoride in the water is turning the frogs gay or whatever it was?
I mean, I don't know, but possibly. I don't know. I mean,
Oh.
he's been whacked out for a while, you know.
Okay.
It's
I think,
Alex Jones.
yeah. Has he ever not been whacked out? I think it's a better question.
And of course, notably, that interview is extremely hard to find on the internet. And anytime it goes up, it gets taken down. Meanwhile, other Alex Jones
Oh.
interviews that go up do not get taken down as quickly. See what I'm saying?
Very interesting.
Who's doing double time on PR for that?
Well, that makes me like really curious because it's like, well, what did you say on this? You know, like what questions were you asked? What came out with it, you know? And I mean, I understand like people when you do things when you're younger, you can be embarrassed about them and stuff, but like I would really like to know what was said. And I mean, like, they can come out and say, oh, I did this when I was however old, and these aren't the beliefs that I have now. These are the beliefs I had then. And just kind of, I worked through them. I grew up. I did this. I did that. I did the other thing, you know? So, I think there's definitely space and room to grow, but I think in order to do that, you have to acknowledge what's come before, if that makes sense.
It does. I'm not exactly sure I agree with that. I mean, maybe I do, but the problem is, like, let's say you say something dumb back in the day. If you admit to it and say, "Oh, I'm sorry," there's a segment of people that will forever hold that against you, you know, and never let it go. You know what I mean?
Right.
For example, there's that photo with Hardy Flanagan in a
Oh.
World War II helmet, you know, and people say, "Hardy's a Nazi." Hardy obviously is not a Nazi. He's not even totally white. You know what I mean? Hardy's not. It's like it was the 90s. People did stuff for shock value. You know what I mean? Hardy obviously is not a Nazi, but people just like won't let it go because they're idiots and because they enjoy inflicting the damage. And deep down, they know they're not even really combating any kind of hatred or racism. They just enjoy causing damage where there are real bad guys out there to attack. So sometimes by admitting that you made a mistake, some people never let it go, you know? Sometimes, so I don't always need my favorite artist to say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said this," or whatever. Like, you know, and we can use it as a Danzig example, which I kind of mentioned earlier, is if someone does something stupid, says something stupid, but then they behave in a better fashion later on, that's okay with me. You know, everyone makes mistakes. I don't need you to get on your knees and grovel for people's forgiveness, you know, because you don't really owe it to anybody, frankly, if you ask me. But that being said, is M's comment, and don't let me put words in your M mouth, is if they don't somehow acknowledge it, you don't know that they don't feel that way right now.
Well, I was talking more like if the episode was out and people could hear it.
But you said it's easier to move on if people acknowledge what they did in the past.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I think in certain cases, like I think in like the Interrupters case, or in like the Morrissey case, like in a case where there's something that's recorded or something that's been written down, I think it's like, oh, I said this at that point in time, but that's no longer how I feel. Or if you don't want to acknowledge, oh, I said this and at this point in time, you can just say these are my beliefs now, kind of thing, and hopefully I've shown those through my actions, kind of vibe.
There is an article, and there is an article from 2020 where she says she regrets going on the show.
Oh, okay, then that's fine.
Well, I also think that there's context of time, right?
Yeah.
Because things that were, I guess, decently okay back then might not be okay now, because there is a progression of time and this stuff has happened where which may makes us like think about what's okay and what's not, or change in perception of things like that. There's also the concept of the internet being pretty much there, and as soon as things are recorded and put on the internet, it's there forever. Like literally this podcast, what we say is recorded and is marked down, so forever. Like things like that. So there's also that as context to this entire argument or discussion.
Actually, I think I gotta give Amy a pass here. Not even a pass. I think she's in the right here. Check it out. This is from her 2020 interview. I just
Okay.
and actually a lot, like even in the comments section, people say, "Oh, she loves Alex Jones or whatever." And so people aren't aware of this interview. The interview is from a 2020 piece with the Telegraph, and this is a quote. "I just want to be very careful about how I answer the question about Alex Jones. Okay, yes, I regret appearing on the show, but at the time, Alex Jones wasn't what he became. Would I go on his show now? Hell no, obviously. But I couldn't see the future. And honestly, at the time, he was just an underground conspiracy theorist. It was entertainment. It wasn't that big of a deal. I had no idea he was going to become a controversial hate speaker. Do you know what I mean? I 100% disavow what he stands for." So I think you got to give her a free pass
Oh.
on that one. I think she's off the hook on that one.
Yeah, that's very fair.
So, all right, well, I'm back to being pro interrupters. Go interrupters. Hooray. I saw, I do love that. The third record. I saw them live at the most recent Punk Rock Bowling. I thought they were okay, not amazing, frankly. It felt a little Disney to me. But that being said, I'll check out the new record. I'll definitely check it out. Let's see here. We got two more quick stories, or maybe one quick and one not so quick. TSOL have indicated, and I had an error in my title here. I forgot one period after the O. TSOL have indicated their upcoming show might be their last. Singer Jack Grisham did a video where he kind of goes on and on, and he doesn't say the band is over. He says this might be our last show. 46 years is enough. Who knows what she said? So to me, that's not a definitive breakup or an end of a band. It's really some older guy saying, "Well, maybe we'll be back. Maybe we won't. We don't know." What annoyed me about this is 23Punk, who I used to thought was an all right website, and now is really starting to grate on me. They got massively popular very quickly, and all they really do is they'll be like, "Here's a picture of NoFX," and it'll get 1 million likes, Or NoFX has a new record coming out. No sources, it get 1 million likes, It's very much in that fat world. They put TSOL 1980 to 2026, as in it's the end of the band, and that, but they didn't put a source, and that spread all over the internet. It's all over the internet, and that isn't what TSOL said. They didn't say they were definitely breaking up. And in fact, their last social media post is just pictures from the show. There's no goodbye statement, no more. That's it. What there was a video of Jack Grisham saying, "This might be the end. We don't know," which is different than we're breaking up. And so I'm really annoyed that this website, 23Punk, is getting so big. I'm a little jealous, but they're getting so big so quickly. And their reporting is so bad, And here's what's really annoying is, when Punk News started, and even through today, like if we posted a wrong story, we would get hammered for it, rightfully so. And I'll point out that Punk News, compared to the other punk websites, way better track record. How about when News quote broke that Fat was selling to Hopeless? We didn't fall on that train, And some other websites got hammered, you see. But what's annoying now is in the Donald Trump world, and with the way websites like 23Punk operate, they said that TSOL is over. It got 1 million likes, 1 million shares, or whatever, right? But if TSOL plays another show, then they'll just say TSOL is back or whatever. And people be like, "Hooray, that's great!" There's no accountability to 23Punk and other websites. Like, people don't care if the info is wrong. You see, they just accept it and say, "Okay, fine," or they don't even recognize that the info was wrong to begin with. And that's scary and annoying to me, especially in the Donald Trump world. And it seems that facts and reality is becoming much more malleable, and people don't care about if something is accurate or not, you see. And I feel people are willingly giving into their news sources not being accurate, and they don't care. And that's scary to me. Sam, agree or disagree?
I agree, because here's the thing. It's easier for you to doom scroll on your phone and look at incorrect infographics than to actually read a caption on like a band's like site or whatever. I deal with people all day, and most of the people that I deal with all day refuses to read policy, and I have to regurgitate the policy in order to keep them in the clear, right? So basically, it's just easier for them to doom scroll, see this thing, and go, okay, I take it as fact. I think during the pandemic, I did the most in my family to fact check everything that was happening, because there was a lot said that was incorrect and wrong. And a lot of it was quite xenophobic, right? So, which, hurt me as an Asian in this in America, because essentially they were putting me in harm, because people are dying, in general. So basically, I was doing a lot of that, and I feel like we've gone back to being super lax with the fact checking. Especially now, since there's quite a bit of folks in an administration that is willing to, change websites, government's websites to take things, negate things, spin their own truths on it, which is possibly not too cool. At least I'm not cool about it. Yeah, I would have to say, people, please do your due diligence and read. We all went to school, hopefully. So please read and take read what people have to say and make up your own mind about it, and not look at these infographics and taking them for truths. Because I read the statement that was put out, and one, it sounded very matter of fact. He was just, saying what the actual what is happening with every man member of the band currently. Very, very dry, and very matter of fact, almost in a rant style, but didn't necessarily close the door on anything. He didn't say that they're done. A lot of the times when bands break up, they're like, we're done. They will say, we're done. It's a declarative statement. There's no declarative statement here. Also, they're all older, really, really old. And, just doing weekends with my husband on tour, my bones hurt. So I can only imagine touring for them, because they're touring in a van and in cheap hotels to keep costs low. Yeah, I was like, that takes a toll on your body. And when you're like, 50 years old doing all that, yes, everything's gonna hurt. I'm not even 40 yet, and I'm only doing that in some aspects for weekends, and my bones hurt. Yeah, I don't know. Fact check, people, please. Em, do you have anything to say about this? Well, you don't live in America, but
I don't. But people need to definitely check where their sources are coming from and definitely check where their news is coming from. Canada has some absolute garbage, alt-right bullshit media too. And like there's a lot where you see people sharing stuff or you see people saying things that are like dog whistles, and you're kind of like, do they know they are? Do they not know they are? Like, there's all of these things, right? Where it's more information is always a good thing. And if you see something that seems fishy or seems off or something's just not adding up, like, look it up from a trusted news source, not from Instagram, or if you're still on Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever, like, get to an actual news thing. Go to an actual press website. Don't go to, don't rely on like fucking, like bullshit claims.
infographic.
Yeah, exactly.
A picture with a caption, a very large caption that looks fake.
Yeah. Check if things are AI generated too. Like that's a thing. That's a
That's
everywhere.
actually scary.
Oh my God. There was like one thing. I don't remember what it was now. It wasn't like news related or something. It was just something kind of silly. But I saw it on Instagram and I'm like, oh wow, like this looks really like wild. So like I just kind of like put my phone up like closer. I'm like, oh my God, that's not real. And it like got me, you know? I was like, oh shit, I have to hone up the AI spotting skills. With the TSOL thing. Yeah, like they've been going for almost 50 years. Like they've done really well to do the amount of shows and continue to do the amount of shows that they're doing now. Like going to they mentioned shows in China, you
Yeah.
know? Like they're touring. Like that's a long flight. And that's shows on top of that. And that's like all this stuff. So
Not a lot of bands go to China, just
no.
saying.
So like they're really getting out there and doing stuff. Yeah, it definitely doesn't say, hey, we're like calling it a day. We're done being a band. It doesn't say that at all. It's just, you know, if anything, it's we're gonna slow up on touring. And what bands of that kind of age haven't done that? Like UK
Knuckle Jerk.
Subs. Oh, true. They have like a well of energy somehow.
Well, I definitely advise seeing the circus if you can, because I feel, you know, I feel like in Rush style, we're near the final few laps, and they're just not saying that. But who knows? I could be wrong. M, last story of the day, Nardwar's now
Yes.
Canadian Knight. Tell us about that.
All right. Nardwar has been appointed to the Order of Canada. So you may be asking yourself, what the hell is the Order of Canada? Well,
I
here
asked
we
myself
go.
that.
I will try to make this as clear and as painless as possible. the Order of Canada is the second highest civilian honor in the country. The first highest is something called the Order of Merit, but the Order of Canada was established in 1967 to mark the centennial of Confederation, and it's given to any living Canadian citizen or non-Canadian who has done a lot of great things for the country. The way that they word it is people who make extraordinary contributions to the country. So that excludes politicians and judges who are actively in office. So anybody, like this is something, an honor that anyone can be nominated for as long as you're alive and you've done something good for like Canada, basically. And you're not a sitting politician or a sitting judge. If you are no longer sitting, you can be nominated. So there's this huge process that takes it can take over 2 years or roughly 2 years to complete. They vet everybody. They look into who they are, what they've done, their contributions, how it stacks up, all of this kind of stuff. This is awarded by the Governor General of Canada, who is basically the monarch's representative in Canada. And it has three tiers. So there's a companion tier, which is the highest level that you can get. And it's just very vaguely described as an outstanding achievement and merit of the highest degree to Canada or to humanity at large. There's officer, which is the second one. And it's merit of a high degree. And then there's member, which is a distinguished service. So the majority of people who are appointed to the Order of Canada are appointed as members. And throughout the years, they can move up the ranks. So, like for example, this year, Rafi, the kids' singer-songwriter, moved up and is now being honored as a companion. So, and appointments can be terminated. There's a whole big thing on the website where it's if you're convicted of like a criminal charge, or there's all of these things that can result in your termination of the Order of Canada. One of the kind of most notable things was a couple years ago, Buffy Saint Marie returned her Order of Canada because of everything that went on there.
If the
So
listeners don't know, for years Buffy Saint Marie portrayed herself as a Native American, and it turns out she's not a Native American. However, to twist the cork, if you will, the Native American tribe that she claimed to be a part of says that she's Native American, even though she almost definitely is not.
what?
Because
Yeah.
they want it'd be like if it'd be like if let me think of someone that's universally heralded. Alexander the Great, he's Macedonian and/or Greek, right? If it turned out that he was actually, I don't know, Norwegian or something, then the Greek people, the Macedonians, might say, no, he's not, because they want the connection to Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
So the Native American tribe wants that connection to Buffy Saint Marie, even though she almost definitely is not, and you just, well, she definitely is not, almost, she, due to DNA test, she almost certainly is not Native American. And I think the way that came about is, didn't like her like niece or something took a DNA test, and it turned out she's like, oh, we're not Native American at all, or something like that.
There is something, yeah, like there is something along those lines. Yeah.
I question the record
So
keeping
it was a
of these
whole thing.
people.
There's like it's such a web once you start looking into it, and then it's like, oh, there's this connecting thread and this connecting thread and this other thing. It's wild. Absolutely wild. There's a Fifth Estate about it, which is like an investigative journalism kind of show. And it got really into it, and it's just wild. Just nuts. But anyway, she returned her Order of Canada. But this year, 80 people have been appointed to the order, and one of them is, of course, Nardwar, the human serviette. And that is important because Nardwar is one of the only people who is being appointed under their stage name and not their given name or their chosen name.
What's Nardwar's real name?
I'd have to look it up off the top of my head. I'm not sure.
I think he's not even online. I think he like keeps it secret. I think he's like
Which is
super.
cool. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, it's John Andrew Vernon Ruskin.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, okay.
Very long name.
Quite a few, yeah.
Johnny Ruskin. It's me, Johnny Ruskin. Do you mean Nardwar?
So anyway, like that's pretty cool. And then some of the other people appointed are like Olympic gymnast Ellie Black, surgeon Chef Kishavi, journalist and activist and preserver of the Inuktitut language, Rassi Nelishak, like stuff like that. So there's a lot of people who have done really cool stuff on this list. And then Nardwar, who's also done really cool stuff, is on this list and is being recognized in a pretty big way. So not too bad for some great music journalism. And he released a little video talking about it, with some, I think he's wearing his special shoes and everything. So
There's a
yeah.
lot of plaid happening here.
It's all plaid.
Yeah. Well,
What do you, yeah.
I when are we going to get Adam White into this?
We
He
can
can't.
nominate him.
We should nominate him to the Order of Canada.
I think we should. Because anyone can be, and anyone can nominate anyone. Interesting.
Yes, he
We
has
should do
made
it.
a lot of contributions to Canada.
He has. So, this is pretty cool. What do you guys think of Nardwar getting in? and are now pushed to get Adam in.
Well, thank you for the Canadian translation of this, because I was literally like looking at this going, what does this mean? As you know, a dumb American, probably I definitely would not pick up on something like this. But the fact that Canada has things like this is pretty damn cool. Like it seems like a very like mathematical or like logical system of like, I guess, ranking folks. For accolades, like, good accolades too, because in America sometimes accolades are given to awful people here, right, John?
Yeah, right. Ugh.
Exactly.
What is in the room down, Sam? Dang.
Sorry. So like the fact that there's like an actual like cool thing that can happen where you're getting an award and you kind of like have it for life, and it's up to you to like, give it back when you're a shitty human being or gotten it like, in false pretenses. Actually, that does make sense, because every Canadian I know is like literally a good human, including you, Em, so that
Oh,
makes
thanks. I
sense.
try my hardest.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do we have anything like this in the States? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, there's certainly honors that that they give out. Sure, there's hold on a sec, I'll look it up.
But being a good American.
USA, let's see, presidential.
John, that's already tainted.
Well, I know it's tainted by, oh, the Medal of Freedom is the big one in USA.
Oh, okay.
So there's the Medal of Freedom, there's the Congressional Gold Medal, there's the Presidential Citizens Medal. So there's a bunch of those kinds of things.
But
Of course, right now they're being given to real creeps. However, Simone Biles got one. She should get one.
yes. Well, the other thing is, like, I feel like they don't give it to like normal humans that
You
did
mean
good
just like
things.
you mean just some guys like walking down the street or whatever? They're like ear to
No. Like they're usually given to like celebrities. Like
Yeah.
Simone Biles is a celebrity.
Let's see here. Well, maybe that's just the ones we hear about, you know what I mean?
Maybe.
Like actually I'm looking at it now, it is mostly celebrities.
Yeah. Also, is it, I don't know. It brings to question like how our, I guess,
Steve Jobs got one. Why should Steve Jobs get one?
oh
That's
boy. Well, most of us do have products by said human in his turtleneck,
Morrissey got one?
John,
Morrissey got what?
we just talked about weird people getting these things.
Tim Allen got one? Holy crap. Ellen got one.
Are you just like naming people
No,
now?
Ellen did get one, but Tim Allen did not get one, and neither did Morrissey. But Ellen got one. So did Lorne Michaels. Why the hell should Lorne Michaels get one? Actually, you're right, Sam. It's mostly celebrities. This is bullshit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was like, it seems in America, it seems like it's mostly celebrities that gets these things.
Well,
And
to be fair, in Canada, like Nardwuar is about as big as celebrities get. So, like, I mean, not that many big celebrities from Canada.
Justin
Yeah.
Bieber.
Yeah, but he came to America, you see.
Well,
Mike Myers, I
he
think,
oh,
still lives in Canada.
he deserves it.
Andy Griffith got one. All right, so I'll just stop naming. In America, it is mostly famous people, though. Well, that's kind of bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, how about teachers and like scientists and stuff,
Exactly. Like, people that does good.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Anyways, I don't know anything else. This has been a long episode, but we had a lot to cover. I'm actually going to mix the New Year's episode right now. I'm going to put this one up too. So Sam or Em, anything else you want to cover? Anything else you want to talk about? We've actually been cranking 1 hour and 45 minutes, but it doesn't feel like that. It feels like it's only been about an hour. So, anyways,
It's been very fast.
yeah. Anything else you guys want to cover, or should we shut this bad boy on down?
I think we should shut it down on a high of a lot of plaid.
Yes.
Wear plaid, people.